If you're looking for the perfect gift, you're covered with a gift that's sure to wow. Taste of Chicago ships Lou Malnati's legendary deep dish pizzas nationwide. Plus, they ship other Windy City favorites too. Visit tastesofchicago.com to order today.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain. Now, ordinarily, I start the podcast by saying it's my opportunity to step away from the world of politics and law that I cover every day on television and enter the world of entertainment. Well, today we sort of stick in the world of politics, or at least related politics, because my guest is Patty Davis, who is, you may know, the daughter of President Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan. And she has written, well, she's written a bunch of books, but the latest one we're going to talk about just out is called Dear Mom and Dad, A Letter About Family, Memory, and the America We Once Knew. Patty and I chatted on our midday news during the midday fix, but she agreed to come back and have a longer conversation because, Patty, I didn't get out a third of the questions I wanted to ask you.
Well, I'm glad we can talk again.
So this will be the time. I may repeat some of those we did on TV just because, you know, I can't assume everybody has seen both. I think we have a different audience here. But one of the things I noted is this book is it's personal, it's raw. Yet there's a sense of dignity about it, great detail. It is a letter to your mom and dad, truly, that we're sort of flies on the wall getting to read. Yeah. You did write an autobiography back in 1992. I know you weren't happy with it. Don't even like to talk about it.
But don't even say the title of it. Don't want people looking for it.
I'm not even saying it. I'm not. I'm just bringing it now. It exists. So my question is, what was it that makes a personal letter to your mom and dad that you're sharing with the world? How did this do what that didn't do?
Well, I mean, I'd grown a lot since I wrote the book We Shall Not Mention. You know, that was, I described that book at times as, I mean, I was on this journey I've always been on this journey to try to process and make sense of this strange, you know, distant family that I was born into. And at that point, I had just sort of gotten my mind around the idea that forgiveness is the answer to everything. I just started studying Course in Miracles. And I was going, okay, well, this makes sense. You got it. But I was so new at it that I believe that, but it was like, but let me tell you everything I'm forgiving them for in detail.
Well, and by the way, you just answered a question. The forgiveness is not about self-forgiveness. It's forgiveness of your parents.
Yes. Yeah. And also, I think, also yourself. And I hadn't quite gotten to that part either. So I was so new at it, you know. And I saw a lot of anger in me and a lot of resentment. And so this book, Dear Mom and Dad, I did not come up with the idea of doing it as a letter to my parents. My editor, Bob Weil, who I dedicated the book to, at Live Right, which is an imprint of Norton, he had the idea. And I had been for years actually trying to do a documentary film based on my home movies that pretty much had the same theme, that there was love there. You know, if I go back and I look at childhood and I look at who my mother was then, there was love there. And that's part of our story too. You know, that's part of anyone's story too. Whatever problems you had and whatever discord and all of that, if you can find moments of love, that's part of your story. Anyway, I've been trying to make this film. It was titled The Reagans Before the World Moved In. And time again, I thought I had producers for it. And I basically got, I hope I can say, screwed over on this.
Yeah, we're a podcast.
Okay. because it would start out as, oh yes, you know, this is your story. You get to tell it. Yes. Obviously. Yes. You'll have control over this. And then a mile down the road, it would be like, okay, well, you just go sit over there, dear, because we know better than you. You don't know what you're doing. We'll tell you, you know? I mean, it happened so many times that I finally went, okay, you know what? I don't think God wants me to do this movie. I mean, I gave up. And I was working on a novel, and then he called me with this idea, and I thought, you know, this is another way I can make the point that I was trying to make in this film, but in a book, and no one can take that away from me, and no one can change it, you know?
You know, one of the things you say in the book, as you write in this letter, actually, your words, You say here you're sharing your emotional residue, words unsaid, dreams never shared. That says to me this is about catharsis for you.
Yeah, I think it was cathartic. I think by the time you get to writing that down, you've kind of gone through some of the catharsis, you know.
Yeah, you did say... By the way, remember when there were bookstores? You used to go in the bookstore and they would have this section of Hallmark books. These, what really surprised me is this is the book itself. And, you know, I've read it cover to cover. And one of the things that really interesting that the size of the book, it's like one of those Hallmark books.
Yeah. As opposed to
a big, was that, I mean, I'm curious, was that a, were you part of that? Was that a, who sort of said, let's make it a, what I'm calling a Hallmark size book?
Well, I don't think that phrase was used, but Bob did say, he said, I think it should be a short little book, a, you know, a small book. And, which I think is appropriate. I mean, I don't think you really want to read, you know, 300 pages of this. I will get a little bit.
I was into it because I'm fascinated by it. But, you know, one of the things, and I did ask you on television, I said, would you have said these things to your parents if they were still alive? Your answer on TV was mostly not. And I'm sort of curious. So now I'll follow up the TV question, which is to say, you might not have, but now that you've written it and it's out there, do you have a view like, well, I kind of wish I could say these things to my parents, or do you still think it's better they just never hear these words?
Yeah, because I think once they're gone, you have a freedom to say things that you couldn't have said to their family. I mean, you know, it's very, I don't know. I mean, if you're sitting there face to face looking at them, you're looking at your own past. You're in front of your own history, do you know? And I don't know. I'm not evolved enough that I could have done that. I'm just
fair enough.
With my mother.
You do write a lot about your siblings as well, or half-siblings, you know, in the book. And you talk about the family being a house built on sand. I'm sort of curious. See, I told you I've read it. I'm sort of curious whether that fragility, because that's what House Built on Sand says to me, or sense of possible collapse, were those feelings shared by your, you know, by Michael, Maureen, Ron Jr.? Did they share this? And any reaction that you had through this from Michael or Ron?
No, I haven't, you know, I mean, that's the thing when you have, when you grow up in a house that is so fragmented and fractured and there's just distance between everybody, you know, everybody kind of charts their own path. So that is that house of sand thing, you know, that if you try later on, and I think, you know, we have at times to sort of build a relationship, you're trying to construct a house on no foundation.
Yeah.
And I think it is an important point because I'm certainly not the only person who comes from a difficult family or a family where there is discord and there is distance and dissonance and all of that. And I think it is an important point to make that if you then down the line say, okay, well, let's try to be a family, you know, let's get to that and try to be a family. By that time, everybody has charted their own course. They might have their own families with, and those families have their own bonds, their own history, their own homeostasis, and you're not part of it. And to assume that that family is going to, your sibling's family is going to like fold itself around you and make you part of it, it's kind of magical thinking. You know, it just usually doesn't work.
You share stories. I mean, you're critical of your upbringing, what goes on. I mean, again, it was a fascinating look at me until, you know, so I didn't know the stories, but I'm not surprised by a lot of what I read, just because I follow history. I get it. But here's the thing. I want to give you my take on something. If I'm wrong, you tell me I'm wrong.
Okay.
But I thought the relationship clearly with your parents was strained, but I thought you were tougher on your mom than you were on your dad. You always kind of, your dad always kind of stepped into almost though he just didn't quite get it. And at one point he says to you, Patty, you were happier than you remember. You got to watch the home movies. It's almost like you're forgiving to your dad because he just didn't plug into it.
Yeah, you're right. I think everybody forgave our father more because he had a sweetness about him. You know, he didn't, if I or anybody had ever said to him, you know, this is so hurt, like you're not available enough and you're not, you know, emotionally here enough for us. And this is really hurtful. If he really got that, he would have been so hurt. You know, my mother wouldn't have cared, but he would have been so hurt. And I think I wrote in here that he William F. Buckley told me once that, because he and my father are pretty good friends, that my father said to him once, you know, my kids always want, they seem to want more from me. And he said, you know, I didn't get a lot from my father and I turned out okay. Right? His father was an alcoholic. So no,
yeah, he didn't. Yeah.
And that was part of the process that I went through of looking at my parents and looking at their background, each of their backgrounds. And I think that is a really important thing to do because that's what they brought to the task of parenting.
Yeah.
They brought their own histories.
And sometimes you wonder, you know, is it who we are? Is it a skill? I mean, you tell many stories. One of the stories that really struck me, I'll be honest, as I talk to friends about the book and encourage them to read it, I tell them this story that you wrote in the book, which is about one night when you're with your babysitter and your folks were out and you tell the babysitter that you want to die and go live with the angels. And when your parents came home, the babysitter, obviously stunned by that statement from you, went to your mother, told her that, and your mom said, oh, that's Patty just being dramatic. And I'm sort of curious, did your mom not get it? Did she care? Was she so wrapped up in her public world and her image that your issues were a distraction for her?
Well, a little bit of all that, although she wasn't that public at that time. And by the way, just as a context, this was in a stage where I was getting chronic nosebleeds. So I would wake up at night and my pillow would be wet. It would be blood. I'd be lying in blood. And it happened whenever the weather got drier in California when the Santa Anas came and stuff. So that happened with the babysitter. And so it was in that, I didn't just out of the blue.
But even this, but even the story itself is still, what's striking is your mother's response.
Yes, yes. So, okay. So, you know, that gave rise to a lot of resentment in me over the years, you know, that maternal love wasn't there. Although there were times that it was there. And I wrote about those too,
yes,
as I said before, those moments of love are part of the story too, but most of the time not. But it's important. It was important to me to look back at how she was raised. The fact that her mother dumped her at 3 years old at her cousin's house and took off on the road to pursue her acting career and left her there for 6 years. Didn't come fetch her until, I mean, she visited sometimes, but didn't fetch her until she was 9 years old. And when she came back, she said, oh, I met this doctor. We're getting married. Now we're moving to Chicago. Right?
Yeah.
Three to nine. That's a really formative time. I mean,
absolutely.
You're going from, you know, almost, well, toddler stage, I can't say infancy, but toddler stage, you know, into some really developmentally sensitive years. And I don't know what that household was like. She never talked about it, but I'm kind of assuming that she didn't get the nurturing. She didn't get the mothering that, you know, everyone deserves.
Yeah. And by the way, Chicago plays a role in your life, too. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit because we're talking a lot to Chicagoans here. Look, I was not going to talk about current politics with you. I know, even from when I read the book, we're not going to have a conversation about Trump, whatever. However, it seemed fair for me to pose a question because you raise it in the book, and that makes it fair game. But please know, I'm not about to turn this into a Trump conversation.
The large orange man is not going to intrude on my book.
Okay. But what you do, I'm going to do it from your parents' perspective, your perspective of your parents' perspective. You write that your dad, looking at the Trump years and the man, would have asked, what happened to the America I loved? And you yourself write that you see democracy unraveling with autocracy leaning in hard. Your dad would have been very fearful about that. I'm curious, what would your mom's reaction be to all that is going on today? Or would it have just been, you know, Ronnie needs to be back in the White House?
Oh, no. My mother had very strong opinions. You know, if you look at like when the man, we shall not mention, the large orange man was running like in 2016, there was a picture of him meeting my parents that they would trot out a lot.
He brings up your parents, too. He does bring your father up from time to time. You know that.
He does. I've noticed that. Yeah. But so my father's being smiling and genial like he always was. If you really look at my mother's face, the way she's looking at him, it's that, you know, it's that look of I can turn you into a pillar of salt. right. and She was still with us when he was running for president. And I remember saying to her, you know, this is not looking, he could actually win. And she went, oh, no, no, no. She got really angry.
Wow. So she had feelings. By the way, can I tell you a story about your mom? I don't think you know.
Sure.
I was in the White House getting a little private tour thing during the Obama years. And there's a statue of Lincoln just kind of next to the elevator that goes up to the residence. And okay. What they would do, Secret Service told me the story. What they would do is they would turn the bust of Lincoln to the side, which you could only like do it at the bust level, not the podium level and okay. Pedestal level. And so they said, when your dad was president, they said they would turn the thing. And when a new Secret Service agent would come in, he would walk through that space. And then a senior agent would say, that bust of Lincoln, it's if Mrs. Reagan sees that, she's going to have your head. And they would tell the guy, you got to turn the thing back. But he didn't know how to do it because he's trying to move the pedestal. And then just before your mom walked in, they would move it back. But you probably don't know that story. I don't know why you would.
I didn't know that story, but it doesn't surprise me.
Exactly right. The fear that even Secret Service had, not of your dad, but of your mom.
Oh, yeah. Listen, she was a very intimidating person. She was. And I don't know, I have no answer for this. I don't know if this is something in people that evolves or that they develop or if they're born with it or a combination thereof. I don't know, you know, but she could instill fear in pretty much anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of a funny story when he told me.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're leaving the world of Trump, but I do want to again ask a question because you bring it up in the book about current issues we're dealing with today. So just to let you chime in, you write of your dad's well-known belief, man is not free unless the government is limited. And you sort of use that as a stepping stone to talk about what's going on with the government trying to own women's bodies. Look, I think gay rights is just a step down the street if you give a chance, and the removal potentially of same-sex marriage. And you write in the book in part because this is about you, I think, maybe becoming your dad's voice today, because I don't think either of your parents would agree with the trends, things that are happening. I think these were my words, that your dad might be rolling over in his grave if he saw where his party stood today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he had such civility, you know, and he and Tip O'Neill, I mean, this is legendary now, you know, he and Tip O'Neill would, you know, have martinis together. Yeah. You know, they would argue, but they had a very cordial civil. They were like lawyers who go at each other in the courtroom and then go meet.
To this day, Patty, to this day, that is the classic story everybody tells about how Democrats and Republicans can get along.
Yeah. And also, and I tell the story in the book about when my father was shot and Tip O'Neill came to the hospital.
Yes.
And knelt down by his bedside and recited the 23rd Psalm with him. It chokes me up just saying it, you know. That wouldn't happen today, I don't think.
I think because maybe today it's not as much about policy as it is about core being, right? I mean, these issues have gone to the core for people, and that you can't, you know what it's like. You can't sit down and have a reasonable conversation with people at dinner.
You can. I mean, it's gotten so personal, but it's also gotten the meanness and the cruelty has gotten so much in the mainstream that, you know, that we are accepting of that. We're accepting of this hatred and this horrible behavior. I mean, I don't remember in my lifetime watching State of the Union addresses where people were, elected officials were heckling the president, you know, and shouting and wearing things they're not supposed to wear.
And of course, by the way, if we have Trump supporters watching us, they would say, but what about Nancy Pelosi tearing up Trump's speech? It happens on both sides.
You know what? I don't think she should have done that. And I really admire Nancy Pelosi. I don't think she should have done, when she did that, I went, okay, I get it. But I don't think you should have done that.
Yeah.
So I think there should be civility across the board. And, you know, listen, she didn't heckle him, but I don't think she should have done that.
Let me go back to maybe just a little lighter moment. You wrote that the Secret Service, you weren't known as Patty. I was almost going to open this and say, hi, Ribbon. what was it? Why? Do you even know why Ribbon was your name?
Everybody was R. My mother was Rainbow. Oh. My father was Rawhide. I don't remember what my brothers were. And I was Ribbon. So everybody was R. I actually have a script that someone is reading right now that I wrote it years ago about a fictional first daughter, and it's titled Ribbon.
Uh-huh.
about her, you know, adventures with the Secret Service, because that's
you
a
didn't, you didn't
complicated
wear ribbon
relationship.
you didn't wear ribbons in your hair. It wasn't that kind of a thing.
No, I don't know. They just came up with another R word. I don't know.
Okay, fair enough. It could have been Riddle. I do want to talk a little bit about, you know, because I didn't get to do this on television, but you had part of your education right here in Chicago at Northwestern. It means you lived in Evanston. So I just want to just take a moment and just have you share a few memories about, I don't know how often you get back here. Would love to take you for Giordano, or not Giordano's, not my favorite, Lunanati's deep dish pizza if you come back.
Yeah, but I haven't been back in a really long time.
Yeah. And of course you did leave Northwestern to go to USC, but I'll have a question there, but what memories do you have of Chicago? Did you like the city? Not what?
I did. You know, it was a very troubled time in my life. I mean, I was doing a lot of drugs, amphetamines. So I was I was kind of working on not being here anymore. You know, I really was kind of, I think that that is at the core of most addicts, that you really kind of don't want to be here. So my health was really bad. And,
so you need to come back and have some fun times.
Yeah.
Well, you went on to USC. One of the questions I always wondered, you answer it in this book. People may not know the answer. Let's at least tease that. Okay. Is why are you Patty Davis? Why aren't you Patty Reagan? And the answer, we get that answer, and it had to do with when you went to USC. I thought it was a deeper meaning than this. But talk about why you changed your name. It's when you went to USC. Your dad was governor.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I started wanting to change my name in high school. I started writing mostly poetry in high school. I wanted to be a writer. It's the only thing I wanted to do. And my father was governor of California. And I just wanted people to meet me for just for 5 minutes, like maybe not know who I was and just have like a human to human exchange, you know, and just be a person to them rather than, oh, here's the governor's daughter. I had this label on me. So the label preceded me, you know, and I just wanted, I didn't, you know, like most teenagers, I was trying to figure out who I was, you know, my own identity. And so I remember when I was in high school, I thought, well, I'll pick like one name. I was going to be Raina, R-A-I-N,
R-A-I-N. As your last name?
No, just one name.
Oh, like Cher.
Like Cher, you know, like Raina. And then I thought, well, that's not going to work very well. And and by the time I went to USC, I really did want to, you know, he was still governor. And I thought, okay, I really don't want to anger my parents. I'm not trying to offend anybody or hurt anybody's feelings. I don't want to get in trouble here because I was always in trouble anyway. And if I pick my mother's maiden name, I mean, there are 5 zillion Davises, you know, that's sort of a non-committal name. And what if I just pick that, you know, it's a family name. And so I decided I would choose that. And then I explained it to them. I explained it just like I explained to you that I just want people to just meet me as a person maybe before they know who I am. And they actually understood and they were okay with it. And I think it is because I chose a family name.
Part of the irony there, of course, is that the name you pick, which is your mom's maiden name, but at the same time, I think of the relationship you had with your mom. So I get to ask you what I don't think you say in the book. Do you ever look back and, I mean, forget about that we know you as Patty Davis, of course, but given how the relationship is with your mom and was with your mom, do you ever look back and say, you know, did you pick Davis because it'll keep her quiet? Or did you sort of look and say, maybe I should have had another name because... do I want to honor my mom by taking her name?
You know, somebody tried to get really deeply psychological about it with me many years ago and said, oh, you know, it was like a cry for more of her attention or a cry for this or a cry for that.
I'm not that deep.
No, I know. But I considered that. And then I thought, no, honestly, it was just that I didn't want to get in trouble with them. I was just trying to not make them angry. I was just trying to make it okay. Really, that it's no more complicated than that.
Yeah.
Well, if there, and, things aren't that complicated, you know.
Plus the thing is, your life was not going to be, I think I'm going to go be a, you know, I'm going to go live in a house and be a housewife or something like that, whatever. You know, you're going to have a public life anyway because you're a writer and you're a poet. And so your name was going to be out there. So I totally get that.
Totally.
What?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
We'll read your work, yeah.
See, what I love about this is I love getting to ask, I mean, I actually have you here and I get to ask you questions that have always been in my head, and here you are to answer them, which is wonderful. Another, just one last Secret Service thing, because I ask about them because when you learned from your brother, Ronnie, do you call him Ron or Ronnie?
Ron.
Okay. You learned from Ron that he shared with you that once you hit majority age, I'm going back to the presidential years, but yep. once you hit majority age, you actually could refuse the detail. You didn't seem to know that. And then the Secret Service said, be careful, you don't want to do that. You're like, you know, you could get abducted. I loved your answer, which is to say, who in my family would pay the ransom? I love that.
Yeah, they send a you know, one of the suits down from Washington, and they're, you know, they're very serious. And he said, you know, you could get, I mean, there are threats against your family and you could get kidnapped. And I said, nobody would look at the Reagan family and go, let's take Patty. Who would pay for me? He almost laughed.
But did you give up the detail or stick with it?
No, I gave it up. So the last 4 years of my father's administration, I did not have Secret Service. It's interesting though, people would always think that they saw them. I mean, and then and announce that I didn't have it, but
yeah,
you know, I would like go somewhere and people go, okay, so where are they? And I go, they're around. And they'd go, they'd point to some homeless guy on the street and they go, oh, that's a really good disguise, man. That's it, right?
It's who you were. Did it ever get in the way? But look, you had relationships in your life. There was, I think, the yoga instructor. What, the yoga instructor? It was very important.
My husband. I mean,
yeah. Were people like, is it, oh my God, you're a member of the Reagan family? Was that just never, because it seemed to me the people you ended up dating or marrying or whatever, they were sort of cool people. You know what I mean? I just, mentally, you weren't. There weren't anybody that needed anything from your parents is the way I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated because you, no matter what name you're using, you are who you are. Once you're first daughter or first son or, you know, once you're a member of the first family, it's like, I don't care what you call yourself. That's who, you know, you, that precedes you, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, dating was hard. And there were people who it was just because, you know, of who I was. They had no real interest in me. And I think part of the attraction between me and Paul, my then husband, was that he was in his own like yoga world and he really didn't care, you know. But it's, you know, it's complicated dating and starting a relationship being followed around by Secret Service agents. It was right before we got married that I signed off from them.
I think it's great that his name was Paul because you have one here.
Oh, right.
I do want to visit one other topic we did talk about on television. I say that because people can go online to WGNTV.com and watch that segment. But the AIDS conversation. I do cover a lot of theater here and stuff, so I have a pretty significant LGBTQ+ viewership of all of this. And you know, look, one of the things that surprised me, I was no fan of your dad's either when it came to a lot of things, but when it came to this, I'm sorry to say that, but when it came to this issue and AIDS, there is so much resentment. And I wanted to give you a chance to explain once again, because you make it clear in the book, your dad wasn't a homophobe. Your dad didn't hate gay people. Rock Hudson was a great friend of theirs, and especially of your mom's. He tried to get, it was the first time like somebody was trying to get to your parents and say, do something about this. And it was sort of Rock's, I think, coming out as he had to at the end of his life. It was the people who surrounded your dad. And I'm not going to make that an excuse. It's just an explanation.
No, nor did I. And I've been wanting to address this for a very long time. And as I wrote in the book years ago, many years ago now, I approached the Reagan Library and said, you know, you have nothing about AIDS there, which is kind of like the Nixon Library not having any about Watergate.
Yeah, right.
I haven't been to the Nixon Library.
It's history.
I don't know. But, you know, how about addressing it? You know, what about even like doing, like really just opening the doors and talking about this, talking about what wasn't done, what went wrong, the mistakes, the you know, how tragic those mistakes were, but also maybe getting rid of some of the misperceptions like that he was homophobic or something like that. You know, I mean, let's even do an event there. Let's get some AIDS activists there. And, you know, I really wanted to just open the doors, and I got a very sort of polite, curt response. Oh, yes, we'll discuss that. I'm sure they never did, and I never heard anything else about it. But I have wanted to address this for a long time, and I thought about addressing it in an op-ed, but there was never really a a reason to do. I mean, there was never sort of a timing reason to do it, you know. And when I started writing this book, I thought, well, now I can do it. And I don't cut my father or his administration any slack in how this was dealt with, or rather not dealt with.
Yeah. And, well, you know, if your dad was still around, you could probably say, Dad, look at President Biden. He's not a favorite. The man's Catholic. He doesn't favor abortion, whatever, but he understands the reality of what the country wants. And what do you think, what would your dad, now we are today, people, LGBTQ plus, so much more accepted. Would your dad look at you today, do you think, and say, Patty, I was wrong?
Well, he kind of, he didn't say he was wrong, but his timing was just all off, you know? I mean, he did speak out about AIDS down the line, like when he
later
was out of office.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I mean? And so what I said in the book was this man whose timing was usually impeccable, his timing was off every step of the way on this one, you know, and in part, and I'm not saying this as an excuse, it just happens to be a fact that, you know, one of his character flaws was that he would assign responsibilities to other people, delegate to other people, and then he would believe what they told him, and he didn't really follow up on his own, right? So he was being told by people who were homophobic and who did not want him speaking out about AIDS because it mostly affected gay people. He was being told, oh, yes, it's being handled. Yes, money's being allotted. Yes. Until Mark Hudson died. And then they couldn't keep him from that, right? And that's when he called Tip O'Neill and said, we need to allot more money for this. And he also went to the White House physician and said, tell me about AIDS. Tell me everything about AIDS. And the doctor did. And he said, you know, I didn't know. I didn't know it was this bad.
Yeah.
I think it's the child of an alcoholic thing. You know, he had this ability, and children of alcoholics do, to compartmentalize, to not see what he didn't want to see. Right.
I get. And, you know, it's sort of, maybe it's like when COVID started and you had, you know, the administration playing down COVID, it'll be gone in a day and a half and all this kind of stuff. And I can remember in the early 90s being in New York with a friend, and it wasn't called AIDS yet. You know, it was just, and I remember us walking down the street in various clubs and stuff. And I looked at him, I said, Larry, I don't know what this is. This is, and he looks, yeah, Paul, it's bad. This thing is going to be, we didn't know, you know, we didn't know what this thing was going to happen. As I'm sure for you, the years went on and I lost many friends and many people in my life. And you just wonder how things would have been different if your dad, you know, or mom just got it earlier. Was your mom in the same boat?
But my mother got it. And that's the other puzzlement in this, that my mother had a lot of gay friends. Her hairdresser died of AIDS, not in those years, a little bit later. But I remember, I wrote about this. I remember a phone conversation with her when she was saying that a friend of hers had died, not of AIDS, but a friend of hers had died.
Yeah.
She said, you know, at this age, you know, you start losing your friends. And I said to her, well, I'm a lot younger than you, and I've lost more people this year than you've lost to AIDS. And very quietly, she said, I know. So where, I will never understand. Why didn't she? She did push him down. And I wrote about this too, getting the speechwriter, blanking out. His name.
Oh, I don't know. Did your brother, I mean, look, Ron was ballet dancer, whatever. He clearly was in a world of a lot of LGBTQ. Did he push him too?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge. I mean, I don't know what their conversations were, but not to my knowledge.
Okay.
I mean, I sort of felt like, I wish I had now, but I felt like I had no currency left after, you know, my speaking out in the anti-nuclear movement. Not that I really had any currency then either, actually, but I tried to, you know, and that didn't go well. I think I just felt kind of beaten down, and I didn't feel like anybody would hear me anyway.
You know? Well, no, I get it. It's tough to be in your position, other than the influence you have on potentially on your parents. I don't know if I asked you this on television or not. I don't remember, but I thought it was interesting that the book title, Dear Mom and Dad, gives your mom top billing. Now, I know we tend to all say Dear Mom and Dad, not Dear Dad and Mom, which is kind of what we say. Well, is that sort of the answer? And the reason I ask is because, you know, your mom, of course, passed some years after your dad left us. Yet your final words in the book are saved for your dad. So is there anything notable about the title being Dear Mom and Dad, or is this, it just...
No, it just, that's like you said, that's the phrase that
that's we say.
It's ever going mom and dad. It's always that way, you know?
Yeah.
Felt weird going, dear dad and mom. That's
yeah, okay. No, I thought so, but I just went, I get to ask. The other thing is that you make it clear that your hope in this book is that others can be helped. And I know I did say to you on television, well, you know, my dad wasn't president, my mom wasn't an actress, and all this kind of stuff. And you have a really good answer to the fact. And the truth, I kind of knew this. It really doesn't matter. There are messages in this book we could all take from it. Your dad doesn't have to be president to get it.
No. You parents bring to the table what they bring to the table, you know, no matter what they do for a living. And so if my father had been a plumber, the dynamic would still have been the same if their histories were the same as they were.
Would they have been the same if dad was just, you know, a plumber and whatever, or maybe a state rep or something? We'll put him in the world of government. And your mom remained as an actress, whatever. Would they have been the same? How much were they influenced by the world that they ultimately entered?
I think they would have been, because I think, in terms of the family dynamic, because I think you parent, unless you've really worked on this and you know, gone to therapy and taken apart your life, you bring to the task of parenting your own history, you know, your own history with your parents. And my parents did not come from a generation where, you know, let's examine our life. I mean, they were champions of the unexamined life, right?
Yeah.
So they didn't look at that stuff. I mean, in fact, I've written in here, they, especially my mother, they rewrote and redacted everything, you know, everything. My mother said consistently, you know, about her mother leaving her at 3 years old, that, well, I completely understood. Mother had to work. She was an actress and she was three. She didn't understand anything except, mom's leaving and I'm here and I don't know who these people are.
Wow. Well, the book is Dear Mom and Dad, as I said. I congratulations on doing it. This is no easy task. I had some things with my mom and stuff before she passed, and we wrestled with those things. But it's good when all is peaceful. I recommend everybody read it if you're a lover of history as I am, or just because you want to learn some lessons for yourself, because it is Hallmark sized. Betty Davis, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Good luck with the book. I hope it's a bestseller.
Thank you.
Forever. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Yeah.